Thank you. So first, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It is a great pleasure to speak at this occasion. So it will be a bit different maybe from the other talk about the previous talk about homomorphisms, and I will speak mostly about the problem of statistics somehow, but in a very rough way. So maybe I will first would like to first motivate this approach. Recently, the use of statistics has been quite fruitful in studying graph limits. For instance, in the dense setting by Lovaas, Sersch, Borx, Segedi, and others, and in the setting also of very sparse graphs. Here, very sparse means typically bounded degree plus minor closed. So you exclude the minor, and then you ask for moreover to have a bounded degree. For instance, a planar graph of maximum degree 20. And this in this setting, it is a way started by Aldous and then Benjamin and Schramm. In both contexts, you can see one of the possible aspects is to consider for some test graph F the how many subgraphs or how many homomorphism images of F you can find in your graph G or in the graph G in a sequence. But there is some small, slight difference between the two cases. In the dense case, somehow you take a random mapping from F to G and you ask, is it a homomorphism? And this gives a probability. If for HF it converges, you will say that the sequence converges. For a very sparse graph, somehow you pick randomly a point in your graph and you look for a ball and you look at the statistics of the isomorphism types of the balls. One way to see both in a common way is to say that you have a graph F, you fix somehow K vertices in F that you will call roots, and you consider your graph G, you pick randomly K vertices in G independently, and then the question is there or how many copies of F you can find in G with these roots? So the second point, somehow the difference here between the dense setting and the sparse setting is that in this dense setting, the number of roots that we consider is, so we consider that all the vertices of F are roots, they can be chosen independently, and for very sparse graph, we have only one. But in the middle, what happens? This will be somehow our problem. If we consider a class of graphs which is neither very dense nor very sparse, what would be the somehow the first question, intuitive question, is there a natural good exponent for the normalization? And somehow it means how many vertices we could choose independently in G when trying to find a copy of F. And some problem which is related is looking for regularities. If we have a class of graphs and assume that a graph in the class contains a large number of copies of F, can you find somehow a regular structure which would explain somehow this concentration? And some auxiliary question is whether this regular structures that you are looking for would be the same for dense and sparse graphs. Okay, but to answer such question here, we have already some difficulties, which is dense and sparse graphs. And what is a dense graph and what is a sparse graph? This is not a simple question, so we have to ask a wise man. What is a sparse graph? For instance, is K4 sparse or dense? Well, it is dense because it is complete graph. You cannot have more edges. But it is sparse, it is planar, it is maximum degree 3. So maybe this question is somehow not a good question. A good question could be not to consider a single graph, but a class of graphs. And when you consider a class of graphs, you can ask, is a class of graph a class of sparse graphs? Or to the opposite, it's okay. What does it mean if it is not sparse? It means that somewhere in it, you can find something which is dense. Okay. We will try to make it more precise. We'll consider to address this problem, shallow topological minors, or if you prefer, small subdivisions. So when you have a graph G, a graph H is a shallow topological minor of G at depth T, if you can find some small subdivision of H as a subgraph of G. And by small, I mean that each branch is subdivided at most 2T times. This factor of 2 is there for some historical reason and for coherence with other notions. It is not that important. For instance, okay, if T is equal to 0, you consider a class T, and you look at all the shallow topological minors at depth 0. So you are not allowed to subdivide anything, but you are allowed to take subgraphs. So it is a monotone closure. But if you increase T, you will add to the class, this class, C nabla tilde T, will contain more and more graphs. And eventually, for T going to infinity, you will get topological closure. So, from a glass C, you have a kind of increasing, non-decreasing sequence of classes, and you can see this parameter T somehow as a time. Okay? And now we give a definition, kind of classification. We'll say that a class is somewhere dense if at some time in this non-decreasing sequence, one of the class has infinite click number, unbounded click number. What does it mean? Because all these classes are monotone, it means that at some time, one of the class will be the class of all simple graphs. So every simple graph will be a topological minor, shallow topological minor of graphs in the class. It will be nowhere dense if it is not the case. And a special case of nowhere dense will be bounded expansion, meaning that not only at each time the click number will be bounded, but the average degree will be bounded. Okay, it may look really arbitrary, but for instance here, why looking for the average degree and not the chromatic number? Because chromatic number will give the same answer. So this chromatic number and average degree will give the same classification. Not the same, somehow, if at some time t, the average degree becomes unbounded, that not for the same t, but at t plus 1 or 2t, the chromatic number will become also unbounded. Okay, let's look at some examples. Consider a class of the graphs which don't have short cycles. Class of graphs such as the maximum degree is bounded by some function of the Gauss. Class of graphs which have non-repetitive coloring with a big number of colors. This means that you have, when you take any path and you look at the colors, you cannot find twice consecutive the same sequence of colors in the graph. And also, this is interesting to look at random graphs. The first one is somewhere dense. Why? Well, okay, you take the 10 to 10 to 10 subdivision of all complete graphs. So at this, for this number t, 10 to 10 to 10, you find as shallow topological minors every graph, every complete graph, so every graph. The second one is nowhere dense. Why? Because this inequality on the maximum degree will give you immediately a bound on the click number of the shallow topological minors. Because here you have to contract, this T has to be sufficiently big to get triangles. So from the girth, you have to reduce to triangle. So this class here has bounded expansion. This is not trivial at all. And somehow it is due to the fact that if you have such a special coloring with a bounded number of colors, a property also holds for the topological minors, for the one subdivision, mainly. But the number of colors explodes, but it is not a point. And for random graphs, somehow the question is ill-stated, because every graph is a random graph, with a small probability, but every graph is a random graph. So we have to say it a bit differently, but the property that for each value of D, there exists a bounded expansion class, such that if you pick a graph, a random graph with n vertices and edge probability D over n, and n tends to infinity, then asymptotically, almost surely, this graph will belong to the class. So somehow it means that it has a dense subset which has bounded expansion, which form a bounded expansion class. Okay. Of course, instead of looking for shallow topological minors, we could look for shallow minors. Shallow minors means simply that, okay, you contract some balls of reduced at most R, instead of at most T, instead of looking for branches with at most 2T subdivision points. So this is a special case of this. Or you can also look at immersions. So topological minors, you can see like this. You have some points in your graph and you route the edges as vertex vision paths of small length. For immersions, you route as edge disjoint paths, not vertex disjoint, but edge disjoint. And also you will add some constraints that no vertex can be used too many times, not too many crossings. So then you will have three kinds of resolutions, and you could say that you will have three kinds of definition of somewhere dense and three kinds of definition of bounded expansion. But actually, whatever resolution you take, the classification remains the same, which is not that intuitive at first glance, because minor and topological minors usually don't behave the same. So this is the world as it looks like. If you look at classes of graphs, you will have somewhere dense classes. It means that at some time you will find small subdivision of every graph. And it includes in particular graph, classes of graphs where you can find a graph with n to 1 plus epsilon edges. For us, it will be sufficiently dense. And these classes have somehow the property that the regular structures in them will be somehow homogeneous, in the sense that it will correspond to points, principal points, that have the same kind of behavior. You can permute them in any way, and you don't change the pattern. So like in a complete graph. And to the left side, we'll find nowhere dense classes, which will be, for us, the sparse classes, and in it, bounded expansion classes. And the natural structures in this setting will be branching. So tree-like. So this is somehow our playground. And now I shall come back to the point, to the main point, or as we say in French, we shall return to our ship. So to the problem of contact. So we were looking for the exponent. And this is, here will be the main result about this exponent, is that if you look at the number of copies of F you can find in a graph G, divided by, so you take the exponent of the number of copies of F you can find, and you look at it, so at some time, so you look at some time in this topological resolution, you look, so in the resolution, and in this resolution you look for the time going to infinity, then this number has a limit, and this limit is an integer. It is an integer which can be either at most the independence number of f, or it will be exactly the cardinality of f. And if f contains at least one edge, the integer will be one of this number if and only if the class is nowhere dense, and it will be cardinality of f if and only if the class is somewhere dense. Let's start with a simple case. Okay, we start from the case f is equal to k2. We are counting the number of edges in a graph. So what does the theorem say? It says basically that if you are looking for the number of edges, maximum exponent of the number of edges in this class, in this resolution, it will be either quadratic, linear, bounded, or zero. Somehow, if you don't have any edge at all. This may look strange because if you take classes with, classes of graphs with no C4, it has the maximum number of edges is n to 3 half. It is not an integer. But if you take shallow topological minors, even one subdivision in it, or two subdivisions, then you will find quadratic number of edges already. And why is it so? Well, there is a theorem of Young, which is which comes from the extremal graph theory, that says that if you have n vertices, and at least n to 1 plus 10 over p edges, constant times this number, then you will find a kn subdivided at most p times in it. And somehow the n here, the number of vertices of your complete graph will only go into the constant. So assume in our resolution, at some time in the resolution we can find a number of graphs arbitrarily big, such that the number of edges is constant time n to 1 plus epsilon. Then using this result, we know that at time 10t over epsilon, we'll get already arbitrary large complete graph. So it means that if at some time for t it is 1 plus epsilon, we will jump sometime after to 2. And this is why when we take t goes to infinity, will eventually end, if it is not 1, then at most 1, then it will jump to 2. Okay. Before I consider the general case, I should introduce some nice tool for this sparse settings for nowhere dense or for bounded expansion classes. And this is kind of sections. So when something is too complicated, you simply cut and look at the small sections. And for us, what does it mean? It means consider that you have a graph, and the main idea is to color the vertices by some n colors, and then consider the subgraphs induced by subset of at most p colors. For instance, here I have colored by some number of colors. I pick all the subgraphs induced by two colors, and because I choose my coloring in a good way, I am happy because all these graphs have very simple structure. For instance, here it is a star forest. So, in order that this principle could be helpful, we would like to define colorings with the property that every p colors induce something simple. Okay, so what will be simple? For us, a measure of simplicity will be the three depths. the three depths of a graph will be the minimum height of a rooted forest such that the graph is in the closure of this forest. If you prefer, you construct a forest on the vertex set in any way. It does not have to be edges of the graph. And you say that every edge of the graph has to happen between comparable vertices in your forest. For instance, if you have a long path, then you need a tree of height logarithmic in the length of the path. And this is somehow the construction. And this parameter has very nice properties. First, it is minor monotone, and it has a very simple characterization in terms of minor. A graph has a small tree depth if and only if it does not contain a long path. Okay. And now we go to this chromatic number, generalized chromatic numbers, and we call Kp of G. Kp of G, I will write a definition here. Kp of G will be the minimum number of colors N such that I can find the coloring of G with N colors in such a way that if I take any subset of at most P colors, then the subgraph induced by these colors, by the vertices with these colors, has three depths at most equal to the number of colors. Looks strange. Okay, take any P and look at what it means. For a set of one color, if I take any subset of one color, the three depths of the subgraph induced by one color has three depths at most one. It means that it is independent set. So my coloring is proper coloring. Okay. Now, what happens for two colors? If I take two colors, the three depths of the graph induced by two colors is at most two. It means that two colors induce a star forest. If I take three colors, then it means that, every connected component is a subgraph of something like this, which is somehow standard. The stars, a subgraph of the stars of these things. This is, or you can see it like this, or you can see it simply like this. You take a forest, which may be quite branching, and then you can have some edges like this, and sometimes maybe this is not present, but you have kind of levels. You have at most high levels. So if you have this property that a graph is in the closure of a forest of height at most t, there is a natural encoding of your graph. For to each, you start from the tree, and for every vertex, you say, okay, is it connected in the graph to his father? Is it connected to his grandfather? And so on. And you have only t minus one, at most t minus one, bits to define at each point to define exactly your graph. So you have a small coloring. You can by a small coloring by 2 to t colors, you can transform your graph of bounded tree depths into a colored forest with at most 2 t colors and bounded height. And moreover, these chromatic numbers are related to our classification in a very nice way. The chromatic number of the graph, these Kp, are bounded for every p, for each p, for graphs in a class, if and only if the class has bounded expansion. And it is somehow bounded in a simple way, in the sense that it is n to little o of 1, if and only if the class is somewhere dense. This is here. I presented this Vest theorem in somehow corresponding to classes of graphs. But there is a local form where you consider the density of the different shallow minors of G. I will not go into those details, but there is a local form. This is the only thing that I wanted to precise. And this local form had already received a few proofs, at least so one proof with from Yarik and myself, one proof by Zdeněk Dvořák, one proof by Kesten and Young, one proof by Xuding, and then another proof by Yarik and myself. So we have, which are not really equivalent. So some are constructive and some are probabilistic. So this is something on which we can safely rely, I think. I think probably three different teams is good number. So let's look at the general case. So we will go to I'll go back to this problem. Assume that G contains a large number of copies of F, then can you find a regular structure? And this more or less looks like umbel. And but also like a sunflower. So we introduce kind of a general notion of sunflower. And okay, the definition is a bit complicated. I prefer some easy drawing. So this is F, and what is a sunflower corresponding to F? We have kind of core. The core of the sunflower is a subgraph, an induced subgraph of F. It is some small part. And then we have some different family of petals. And for each family, each subgraph here, we will have several isomorphic copies. And these copies will be linked to the core the same way that this part was linked to this core here. And moreover, we ask that between these different petals, different family of petals, we have no edge. So assume that you have this kind of sunflower. So we have a core, and we have k families of graphs. Then we have the property that if we take, if we pick anything in the first family, any graph in the second family, and so on, any graph in the k family, together with the core, it will give us a copy of F. This is the definition. And as we have no edges between graphs here and graphs here, this number K is bounded by the independence number of F. Okay. Because we don't have edges here. And moreover, if we have such a family, we can easily get a lower bound on the number of copies of F we get in this sunflower. It is simply the product of the size of the family of petals. And now comes the main lemma. And the main lemma says that if you have a graph which contains at least n to k plus epsilon copies of a graph F, then you will find a k plus 1, a sunflower, with k plus 1 family of petals, such that each family contains that many members. Okay, this is not a very nice formula, but something is interesting for us. First, notice that in general it doesn't give anything. If your graph is too dense, maybe it will say that this number is at least 0, so or at least one, so it doesn't give anything. But assume that you can find your graphs in your class, you consider a class of graphs, and that in your class, the KP of G are much smaller than the order of G. For instance, if you have graphs of order N, KP of G is of order of magnitude N to little of one. Then this power will be much smaller than G. it will mean that you will be able to find some large sunflower with many, many petals of big size. Okay, just a very fast idea of the proof, how to prove this. First, we consider such a coloring of the graph with KPFG colors. And we look at all the possible sections. So it is clear that if F has P vertices, any copy of F in G uses at most P colors. So if we look at all the sections, we will find this copy somewhere. And because we don't have many sections, this number, we assume that they are somehow small. We can find one section that will contain many copies. So it will contain at least this proportion, 1 over this number, proportion of all the copies. Okay, so we reduce to this part. This part has bounded 3 depths. That's 3 depths at most P. So this part we encode as a colored forest of height P. And by using this encoding, we reduce the problem of finding counting copies of F in a big graph to the problem of counting small trees in a big tree, or small forest in a big forest, colored forest, but with bounded height. And so we simply. Then we have to prove the lemma for colored forest. It looks simple, but colored forests of height T are not as simple as one could expect. It needs some technical points. So now that we have this lemma, then consider this sunflower and take a graph which is sufficiently big, because N can be chosen arbitrarily big. Then we'll find a subgraph whose size is something like n to some epsilon, so whose size tends to infinity, and the number of copy of F in this subgraph somehow has exponent k plus 1. So we can find arbitrary big graphs in the class for which the exponent of the number of copies of F will jump to k plus 1. So what we got is this. If we have an infinite hereditary class such that for each integer p this Lin soup is 0, then we get that the logarithmic, the maximum, the supremum of this exponent is an integer. And this, as I said before, is exactly characteristic from nowhere dense classes. So it means that we have this theorem. And because of the definition, I recall the definition, C is nowhere dense, is equivalent to, for every T, this class has bounded click number. So if C is nowhere dense, it implies that for every T, this class is also nowhere dense. So if I have this property, then I can take the limit. I can consider not C, but C nabla tilde I, or nabla tilde T, and then put T to infinity, but I know that for each I, the value will belong to this set, and this value will be non-decreasing, so I have a limit, and it will be an integer in this set. And if C is somewhere dense, well, it is easy. We know that at some time we'll get all graphs, so all complete graphs, and we simply have to count the number of copies of F in a complete graph, and we'll get an exponent which is cardinality of F. Okay, now I would like to, it is almost what we wanted, almost, because I recall in the very beginning, I said, somehow we have F and we want to have some roots also. We want to pick some roots, and then in G, we want to pick at random the same number of points and look at the average number of copies of F with these roots. So somehow, we are counting the number of copies of F, but we would like also to be able to count the number of copies of F in a rooted way. So how many assignments of the roots are possible in order to find a copy of F with that root? This is at the same time kind of logical and counting. And you can formulate it like this. If you have some first order, existential first order formula, and you want to count the number of assignments, so that it will be satisfied. It is simply I don't say anything. It is simply you want to find the number of where to assign the roots in such a way that you can extend to a copy. And you can change you can adapt the proof you can adapt the proof of this stepping up lemma to prove that if the logarithmic density of the number of solutions is at least k plus epsilon, then you can find a kind of sunflower of solutions for exponent k plus 1. Okay, this is the kind of question that could extend this point. So now we know that for a class, we have an idea of what the exponent means, but for a single graph, this n to alpha maybe could be explained by some highly regular substructure, but I will not go into this. I would simply would like to mention that from an algorithmic point of view, counting the number of subgraphs in sparse graphs, sparse classes, is not that difficult. In the sense, it's not that difficult. I mean, it's not that difficult in the sense that there are algorithms that take a small time. I did not say that the proof is simple. More precisely, if you want to count the number of assignments that allow a Boolean query to be satisfied in a class which has bounded expansion or which is nowhere dense, then you have a standard algorithm that will run in a linear time for a class with bounded expansion and almost linear time for nowhere dense class, even if the number of vectors is not linear. For instance, if you want to count the number of C4 in planar graphs, you can do it in linear time, even if the number of C4 is quadratic. You are counting, not listing. You are not enumerating the C4s. You are simply telling how much do you have. And why does it work? It is simply the same idea. You slice, you use this coloring, you look at all those possible sections, you count because it is more easy, it has bounded tree depth, and then you do inclusion-exclusion to have the exact number. And I would like to end with two open problems, which are related somehow to this. The first is, what is the difficulty to count counting assignments for existential first order formulas in general? If you have an existential first order formula, is it possible to count the number of valid assignments in linear time for classes with bounded expansion? Not clear. So for Boolean query, we know it is true, but for existential, we don't know. And the second question is about the problem of determining whether first order satisfaction could be a fixed parameter tractable in nowhere dense classes. For bounded expansion classes, it will be the subject of a talk of Zdeněk. And that's all.